Haïti, c'est belle la mer, c'est belle montagne avec belle rivière, c'est belle plage à pied cocoyer, bel paysage avec belle couleur. Haïti, c'est sans café, qu'a monté dans même les matins, c'est sans la rouge qui fait poser, pour flaiser qu'a bourgeonner. Haïti, c'est bassin blé, cascade pichon avec sodo, c'est Acadé, la citadelle, c'est la bâtie à Marigot. Haïti, c'est la vallée, c'est Port-Sali avec Zabrico, c'est Mon la selle, Pic Macaya, c'est Mamlad avec Mon Bilbao. Haïti, son douce macos, c'est yon poyen pistache grillé, son gicolé qui poubam fosse, son bouteille cola bien glacé. Haïti, son bon brio, son bon frita, yon bon tasso, son bon légume avec sirop, son bon diri avec la l'eau. Haïti, son bon bouillon, son soujou pou akou piment, son bon cassave avec mamba, quatre pénins à casser. Haïti, son bon dombwe, ka mariné, non bon sans bois, son bois cochon, bon clélé. Haïti, son bon café d'histoire. Haïti, j'ai jamais aimé.
That's Michael Benjamin, or Mick Ben, as he's popularly called, with his just-released Haïti Say, a love song to Haiti, celebrating all the places and things that Haitians cherish about their country. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Thursday, January the 9th, and the attorney for Jahai McMath's family says that the teenager is improving. I'm going to read a story filed by Carol Jones for the San Francisco Chronicle. It's short, so, and it gives the information that we need. Doctors have given Jahai McMath feeding and tracheostomy tubes, and the Oakland teenager declared dead almost a month ago is improving, her family's attorney tweeted late Wednesday afternoon. Quote, doctors are optimistic that her condition has stabilized and that her health is improving from when she was taken from Children's Hospital Oakland, attorney Christopher Dolan wrote in a tweet, quote, I can confirm the trach and G-tube procedure on Jahai McMath was a success, and she's doing very well and now getting the treatment she should have gotten 28 days ago, unquote. Jahai, 13, is at an undisclosed facility after her family moved her from Children's Hospital Oakland on Sunday, almost a month after doctors there declared her dead following complications from a tonsillectomy. Jahai was connected to a ventilator and a dextrose drip. Three doctors determined Jahai is dead due to brain death, but her family believes that she is alive because her heart and lungs are functioning. The family won court approval to force Children's Hospital to keep Jahai connected to the ventilator and then to move her to a new facility that planned to give her a feeding tube and a tracheostomy, which her family believes will give Jahai a chance for recovery. Well, hopefully she is improving. Well, I'm glad that you're here with us. Today we are going to revisit a not-so-pleasant occurrence. On January the 12th, 2010, a 7.0 magnitude earthquake with an epicenter just west of the capital, Port-au-Prince, struck Haiti with devastating impact. About 250,000 dead, more than 300,000 injured, about 294,000 properties destroyed, and almost 2 million people made homeless. International aid and support personnel began to pour into the Western Hemisphere's poorest nation to assist with relief efforts and to help rebuild. But 4 years after the catastrophe, hundreds of thousands of Haitians are stuck in dire circumstances, their situation and living conditions showing little, if any, improvement. We are fortunate to have with us once again Kim Ives, a prize-winning documentarian and editor of Haiti Liberté, a news weekly serving the Haitian diaspora. He's here to discuss with me and with us what has and what has not happened to the people of Haiti over the past 4 years. Kim, a joy to have you with us today.
Well, thanks again, Yatrice. That's a very nice introduction, and I'm glad to be with you.
Well, let's start with what you recall of the moment back in 2010. What did you witness yourself with your own eyes?
Well, I was in New York. Haiti Liberté has offices in New York and Port-au-Prince, and we come out on Tuesday evening. That's our deadline, and in fact, we had the paper relatively ahead, and we started to get calls all of a sudden that there had been an earthquake in Haiti, and very rapidly, it became clear that there was a major earthquake and a major disaster. And a few days later, I flew down to Haiti with the Democracy Now! Team, and we managed to get into the airport, as they say, on a wing and a prayer, because it was completely taken over by the U.S. government, by the U.S. military in particular, and they were bringing in plane loads and plane loads of soldiers and weapons. Why? Because their principal concern was not pulling people out of the rubble and to go assist people, but it was to prepare for what they thought was going to be an orgy of looting and anarchy. And really, we saw the exact opposite. We saw people coming together and often using their bare hands, using spoons and small household items, digging each other out of the pancake houses that one saw everywhere when one landed. The night we arrived in Port-au-Prince, we went to a sort of guest house for NGOs, which has a small soccer field behind it, which was completely filled with people. Basically, every empty lot and parking lot and park was totally filled with people in tents and under tarps and under sheets at that time. Because they were afraid to go back in their houses, because if there were follow-up earthquakes, as there were quite a few tremors. And on the kitchen table of that room, we watched a team of doctors who had flown themselves in with their own money, no help from the U.S. government, which was flying in its soldiers and guns, amputate the leg of a young man who had gangrene had set in. It was they had to do it, and it was done. It was a heroic operation to watch, not just for the patient but for the doctors, to see them do it under these difficult conditions. So, what we really saw, Utrice, was a tremendous outpouring of the world's compassion and solidarity, just that built-in human reflex of solidarity on display. And what was so astonishing was, for instance, I think the second morning we were there, we went down to the General Hospital, and they're barring the way, not just to us journalists, but to hundreds of people coming in trying to either see a doctor for their own injuries or to see family members who were in there and bring them food or medicine. Blocking the way were soldiers of the 10th Mounted Division from Fort Drum saying, no, our orders are nobody comes in here, which was totally absurd. we managed to get in through a side door and got into the fellow who was running the hospital at the time, one of the doctors, longtime doctor in Partners in Health, Paul Farmer's operation, who was running the hospital at that time. And we told him, you got soldiers down there blocking the way in. And he was totally shocked and outraged and immediately said, you know, get them out of there. People have to be able to come in. And that was done. But this just shows the response that happened, which was one of more seeing the victims as possible perpetrators of violence or something than as victims, as they should have been seen. And but it was a horrific situation, Utrecht, just to see the buildings and many people were still underneath. And when I was there, it was when I got there, it was 5 days afterwards, and people were still trying to dig people out. Dozens of, maybe I'm going on too long, but there were just dozens of teams from around the world of EMT and so forth who set up on the airport, and they came in also trying to help. So it was both a tremendous display of world solidarity and Haitian heroism, but also of very short-sighted policies by the U.S. Government, I thought.
Well, you've been covering Haiti. This is your specialty. And over the years, you've been able to file reports about aid coming in, other than medical, but the promised help to rebuild. I'm reading from a group of people. This is an organization. DevEx is what it's called, but it's really the Center for Global Development. And they filed this recent report. January the 12th, 2014, marks the fourth anniversary of the massive quake in Haiti that left over 200,000 people dead and several million people homeless. The response from rich countries was overwhelming. Over $9 billion was disbursed towards relief and reconstruction efforts, $3 billion from the United States, and an estimated $3 billion in private contributions, and another $3 billion from foreign governments. 4 years later, the earthquake in Haiti is almost forgotten. The UN Office of the Special Envoy for Haiti and charitable organizations such as the Bush-Clinton Haiti Fund have quietly closed their doors. Many non-governmental organizations in Port-au-Prince have scaled down their operations. Other disasters, such as Typhoon Haiyan, dominate the news. They raise this question to ask that after $9 billion, and perhaps even more than that, poured in. The headline to this op-ed piece that they filed was, 4 years later, we still don't know where the money has gone.
Right.
You concur?
Totally. I mean, there have been, there are numerous films out now that your listeners could look. One is by a woman called Michelle Mitchell, who worked with Bill Moyers and set up an outfit called Film at 11, an old Walter Cronkite tagline. And they produced a film called Where Did the Money Go? And a lot of it is looking at the outrageous conduct of some of these big box charities, in particular the Red Cross, which got hundreds of thousands of dollars from people who trusted them to get the money to the right people and ended up essentially doing very little with it and leaving people high and dry. There's another very excellent film by the Haitian filmmaker Raoul Peck called Assistance Mortelle in French, Fatal Assistance, which is a devastating look at really how this NGO mafia, this NGO criminal class comes in and essentially makes their living off of other people's misfortune. And the film, it actually has some very groundbreaking stuff with President at the time, René Préval, who essentially was overridden. He was left completely on the sidelines as the U.S. ambassador, and Bill Clinton and others essentially took over. And in fact, at one of Bill Clinton's final, one of René Préval's final appearances with Bill Clinton, he got up out of his seat and walked off out of the room when Bill Clinton got up to speak. Unfortunately, it was a sort of sterile protest. He could and should have done a lot more in the eyes of many Haitians, but he was essentially overridden, given a coup, and at one point they were even talking about putting him on a plane, much as they did Aristide. I mean, there's a excellent piece out today. There's quite a few, and we'll see more, I'm sure, in the coming days. Utrecht, 4 years after the earthquake, housing, sanitation, healthcare are still pressing needs in Haiti. This was put out by the Center for Economic Policy Research, CEPR, which has, as they always do, some excellent figures in there, such as that 67.1% of the USAID, that is U.S. Agency for International Development contracts, USAID is an arm of the State Department, went to beltway-based firms. And just 1.3% of all the USAID contracts went to Haitian companies. And of the 6.43 billion dispersed by bilateral and multilateral donors in Haiti from 2010 to 12, just 9%, 9 cents on every dollar went through the Haitian government. So essentially, we've seen this parallel government, which the U.S. has been trying to set up in Haiti for years, and not just Haiti, but in any country where they hold some sway. They essentially totally sidelined the Haitian government from its own job of providing for the Haitian people. And what was the result? As they also point out, and this is the most astonishing figure in the whole thing to me, Utrecht, you have tens of thousands of houses destroyed. In 4 years, they've managed to build in the Clinton, Bush Clinton program put in place 7,515 new houses. I mean, that's just mind-boggling that so few new houses could have been built. And we just have an article this week in Haiti Liberté, if people are interested in looking at that, really about where those houses are and the problems of them. A lot of the time they just throw up these houses in the middle of a desert, and no water, no electricity. The things have been vandalized. They're plagued with all kinds of problems. And, you know, this is the kind of showbiz assistance that the Clinton regime in Haiti and the Martelly, the government of President Michel Martelly and Laurent Lamothe, the prime minister, have provided, essentially one where they do a lot of photo ops, handing over keys, and then afterwards they take the keys back and say, you know, get out of here. So this is what we're dealing with.
These companies that get these multi-million dollar contracts out of promised aid and available money, available pool of money, are supposed to file forms that in the interest of transparency, very detailed forms about how the money is used. And there's a complaint that the companies that do get the money haven't been doing so, but continue to get money to do things that are substandard, very poor, or just plain, you know, just robbery, really. How does this continue? You talked about the a mafia, if you will, of the of these the NGO mafia. How does that work?
Well, essentially, you have these NGOs like World Vision or CARE or even the Red Cross, and they're really the humanitarian equivalent of Bechtel or Blackwater, or you know, they're arms of U.S. diplomacy, almost quasi-official, quasi-governmental. And I mean, there's really no greater misnomer than non-governmental organization. Every one of these NGOs is working for some government or is funded by some government. And so, essentially, their role begins to advance their patron government's interests in the country, which means becoming the conduit for monies given. So when USAID money is given to supposedly help the Haitian people, it's recycled right back to 67% of it to these Beltway corporations who come in and provide the tractors and the specialists and the guys who come down getting hardship pay for living usually in a very luxurious hotel with a pool and, you know, a driver and a car and et cetera. I mean, it's outrageous to see how a lot of these NGO workers live, and they're getting hardship pay on top of it. So it's a huge, it's like capitalism. You know, it has all these internal laws which are just crushing people in many ways, because the people who give the money, who pay for them, the taxpayer or the person contributing their $10 or $100 or $1,000 to an organization to do good work and help people, in fact, are funding this incredibly misguided and misguiding game of bluff, where they go down and make great pronouncements and say they've achieved such and such goals, but in the end, the people are still living in dirt, mud, and under tents and tarps. Over 200,000. 4 years later, 200,000 people still living under tents and tarps.
According to this group, as I just mentioned, they said in an op-ed piece that they published, they said, "We know that 92% of funds disbursed in fiscal year 2013 went to organizations that are based in the U.S. Mm-hmm. The majority of disbursements for fiscal year 2013 were to for-profit companies."
Right.
And it shows that Chemonix, a company called Chemonix, a for-profit provider, received 7 of the largest 10 contracts, totaling $42 million.
Yeah.
Well, that's a shift, is it not, from the NGOs to the for-profit sector. And this one company, which, by the way, has a tremendous, I looked it up, has a tremendous number of issues with it, legal issues. And still they were able to capture 7 of the 10 largest contracts with, and so is there now, this is like, it goes beyond the nonprofit. And by the way, very, very few, you're correct, very few Haitians actually were employed, or very few Haitian companies that could supply some of the rebuilding materials and personnel to do the building were allowed to. They did not get these contracts. So this business of providing, quote, aid is itself a kind of underground economy, where international money allocated to help people, and one of the ways they can help, and one of the ways they're required to, this is not one of the things that is left up to them to decide, this is actually required in getting these contracts, that you hire local people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and they don't. I mean, it was a tremendous battle. What was the Haitian government doing at the time that all these contracts, they were the one removing the rubble. And that was one of the hardest jobs, was basically just clearing these hundreds of thousands of square yards of broken concrete and twisted rebar. And nobody wanted, none of the so-called aid agencies wanted to do that. That ended up being the Haitian government outfit called the CNE, the Compagnie Nationale des Ingénieurs, which basically had been set up by Préval. They were the ones who cleared most of it themselves, while these other people came in posing and posturing and strutting around and accomplished very, very little. And I, in fact, spoke to one Haitian businessman at the time, and I remember he was speaking with a Haitian government official who said, listen, they've earmarked 15% to go to Haitian corporations. So this was a conscious policy. It wasn't just that there was some sort of invisible hand of bidding that went into it. No, it was a conscious policy by the makers to essentially pass the puck to people inside the Beltway mostly, but above all to American firms in the case of U.S. funds. And I'm sure the same is true of the French and German and Spanish funds as well.
What do you know of the Bush-Clinton Haiti Fund and why it, quote, quietly closed its doors, unquote?
Well, I think what has happened is they had set up a thing called the International, the IHRC, the Interim Haiti Reconstruction or Recovery, it changed its name at some point, commission. And this was a commission, and I wrote a piece on it back at the time when it was formed after a March 30th, 2010 summit at the UN, where it had been mostly foreigners, and because I think Haiti Liberté and maybe a few other press cried foul, they ended up making it half Haitian, even though the Haitian board members eventually rose up in protest and said, we're nothing more than rubber stamps and you're just doing your own thing. But this board of governments who are call themselves friends of Haiti, France, the U.S., Canada, and the international banks that work for them, the IMF, World Bank and Inter-American Development Bank, essentially set up this board, which gave, as I'm sure many people have heard, about $10 billion over 5 years to Haiti, or pledged it. Then they essentially ran the show. They decided who would get the funds, where it would go, how it would be spent, and supposedly it was going to be something that would involve the Haitian people, but it didn't. Token people they put on this board were from the bourgeoisie and the business class, and many of them are seen as pro-coup and anti-democratic. So, in short, this IHRC took over, and the Clinton-Bush Fund, there was the Clinton Foundation, there was the Clinton-Bush Foundation, and there were a few other similar ones, were sort of playing back up, and a lot of it was photo ops and stuff, frankly, Utrice. And then when the Martley group came in, this group is what we call in Haiti the Makuts.
Explain who Martley is to our audience.
Which was the Tonton Macoutes were sort of the paramilitary force, the eyes, ears, and fists of the Duvalier regime that ruled Haiti from 1957 to 86. And so the Macoutes kind of wanted the action for themselves. And so in some way they sort of pushed Clinton and his associated foundations and the interim IHRC out of the picture. They didn't renew the IHRC, and that's basically when the Clinton Foundation and the Clinton Bush Fund both sort of slunk off. So essentially now most of the a channeling of funds, primarily from the Petro Caribe Fund, which is the huge gas fund that Venezuela has set up for Haiti to give them free gas and give them favorable repayment terms. This money is going to line the pockets of this Macoute sector, which has taken the Haitian government in a headlock, in which the Haitian people are now rising up against.
So where are things now? The last time we talked about Haiti being on the brink of, you know, just a total disaster, not earthquake related, but in terms of where people are fed up with the way life is going or not going. And we have so many factions developing on a political landscape, the political landscape becoming very contentious. But we see the link to this internal this fracturing of the political landscape in the context of the rebuilding effort not moving forward fast enough and not being effective and not basically holding up to the expectations. 4 years, they should have something to show that, you know, roads have been built, sewer systems have been installed, electricity has been restored, that kind of thing.
Yes, well, unfortunately, what happened was the U.S. essentially hijacked an election that happened in late 2010, about 10 months after the earthquake. They inserted the candidate they wanted to see, essentially overruled the Haitian Electoral Council, which gave two candidates. In one of them, in fact, was the guy who ran the CNE, this construction firm that cleared all the rubble. He came in second, according to the Haitian Electoral Council. But the U.S. said, no, there should be Michel Martelly should be there, and he came in a close third. Some people say that, in fact, he placed sixth or seventh, but in any case, the U.S. Saw to it, primarily through a personal visit from Hillary Clinton, then Secretary of State, at the end of January 2011, where she flew in and read the Riot Act to President Preval and said, basically, we want to see Martelly in that runoff. So the runoff was held, Martelly won, and he came in. And I think the U.S. thought they were going to be able to work with him. And in essence, he said, yeah, you work with me, but on my terms. And he was has been the hallmark of his regime is essentially the tremendous corruption that it's undertaken. A lot of it to get a cut of this aid money flowing in. And the people at first gave him some slack and said, well, let's see what he can do. But because he has been all talk, that's what they call it, alorao, which means all talk. It's the all talk government, and the people have been slipping deeper and deeper into misery and poverty and desperation, that essentially we've seen this uprising start. It really got traction in November. We saw demonstrations almost every week. of tens of thousands of people through the street. They're supposed to restart on January 13th, the first Monday of the new parliamentary session, which begins essentially the day after the earthquake anniversary. So Martelly will be going to the parliament, and there'll be huge demonstrations outside. So we'll see what happens. But essentially, I think the U.S., in addition to hijacking the aid coming into Haiti for the earthquake, hijacked the political process, and the mess we see in Haiti today is a result of that. And we can even trace it back further to the two coup d'etats that they carried out in Haiti in 1991 and 2004. Essentially, this has kept the country destabilized for the past 25 years.
Is it possible that this actually is being aided and abetted, this state of complete instability, not complete, but almost complete instability, is being instigated and being maintained so as to achieve a whole different objective? The earthquake and the immediate aftermath of providing all this money, which could have been used to shore up political sectors that wouldn't have a prayer otherwise. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the people who really need the help, the people who are suffering the most, are being manipulated one way or the other because it's so desperate. They need some shelter. They have children who need to go to school. They have to feed themselves every day. I mean, and 4 years down the road, all we see are the increasing tensions and the desperation setting in. A group of people like that, these millions of people practically who are so destabilized, are prime. It's a prime population to manipulate to achieve other underhanded and unseen objectives.
Yes, well, I think Haiti has always been, I could say, a model country. It was the first democracy, we could say, I think, we could argue persuasively, in the Western Hemisphere in 1804, establishing the first non-slave state with equality between all men and women. And it has been punished for that throughout its history ever since. Not only through repeated interventions and incursions in the 19th century from the U.S., and we have to remember the U.S. put a 60-year embargo on Haiti, much longer even than the Cuban embargo that we're presently still watching today against revolutionary Cuba. But the revolutionary Haiti, it was 60 years. It wasn't until the middle of the Civil War that the U.S. recognized Haiti. And then after intervening and occupying the country from 1915 to 1934, there was a tremendous progressive movement in Haiti. And the U.S., I think, has really tried to make an example of Haiti. We have to recall that in 1990, December 16th, 1990, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, a former priest, was the first president, the first candidate to really foil U.S. election engineering. And the U.S.-backed candidate, who had a war chest of about $36 million, largely provided by the U.S., a former World Bank economist, was defeated by this parish priest with a war chest of $500,000. And this really became the template that people like Hugo Chavez and Morales in Ecuador and Brazil, too. So now we have a Latin America, which is very different from what we saw 20 years ago. So Haiti forged that path, and really I think the U.S. has deployed the UN in Haiti. Haiti is still militarily occupied 10 years after the 2004 coup by the United Nations at a cost of about $800 million a year, money that could be going to help earthquake victims, that could be going to help cholera victims, and we can mention about the cholera epidemic there too. But essentially, I think Haiti is being used as a kind of example and a message to the rest of Latin America is we can do this. We can come with our international peacekeepers and with our NGOs, and we can take you over. We can steamroll you. And Haiti, look at Haiti, and that is what will happen to you if you step out of line. Now, a number have, and they're standing up, and they're even defending Haiti. Chavez has refused to take part in any of the occupation. Others have participated, such as Brazil and Argentina, but they're pulling back. So to me, Haiti, it's in many ways an important piece on the geopolitical chessboard. And what we see in the way of economic and political bullying going on there has a lot to do with the larger game in the hemisphere.
Just the same, we have this huge population that still is stuck 4 years since the earthquake. What, therefore, is evidencing itself as a kind of alternative solution? In as much as the aid probably has slowed down, we mentioned that the Clinton-Bush initiative and the Clinton Foundation have quietly closed their doors and slipped away. The companies that have already made money, they've already made money, and they too have lost interest. They're interested as long as there's money to be made. So is there a sense that within Haiti, people are coming to terms with the idea that they will have to do a large part of this themselves?
Yes, and I think they would like to do that. And I think they would like to have the U.S. off their back and Canada and France as junior partners as well, and the NGOs and the U.N. as well. Haiti... and Haitians, they're very proud, and not only of their independence, but what they built. You look at the eighth wonder of the world, the Citadel up in Milo in the north. Here's this, if anybody can get to the north of Haiti, go see this structure, which was built, totally by Haitian labor over the course of, I think it was 13 years, giant edifice. So Haiti has some sort of tradition of self-determination and sovereignty, which is, it's very, very deep. And I think a lot of the policymakers in Washington and Paris and Ottawa don't quite understand this. So to me, there is this emerging, democratic nationalist movement. It's crystallizing around sort of a new leader, a guy called Senator Moïse Jean-Charles, who's a very articulate, very fearless a critic of both the occupation of the U.S., of Martelly, and this movement is... gained great ground. I mean, he's hailed and acclaimed everywhere he goes. So I think in 2014, we're definitely going to see, a major shift. Now, the one wild card, Utrice, and I don't want to get too far afield from the earthquake, but is that the original party, the Famille Lavalasse, former President Aristide, is taking a very, prudent and maybe a mild approach, where the only thing they ask for is inclusive elections. They've been excluded from all elections since 2004. So to some extent, if they go into elections with Martelly, and Senator Moïse's movement is saying, no elections with Martelly, we need a a new government which can hold honest elections, because Martelly can't even hold an honest carnival. So if the Premier Lavalas does go into elections with Martelly, maybe we'll see that might break the mobilization. But it's a big question. It's 50-50, and it could really go either way.
One of the possible solutions still has not been enacted, actually, because it involved the Haitians in the United States wanting to receive their relatives here to take care of them while Haiti rebuilds or while the situation is resolved. And it was given a green light. You know, there's no money that the government has to spend to have this done. The visas had already been approved. The program had already been approved, but the Obama administration simply hasn't done it, and it's now year five that people are waiting to have their relatives and loved ones come to stay with them in the United States, where they will assume 100% of the responsibility for funding their needs, and it hasn't been done. Do you know of any movement on the Haitian family reunification program?
I don't. I know that Steve Forrester down here in Miami, where I presently am, a lawyer who worked for many years with Father Gerard Jean-Just at the Haitian Refugee Center on 54th Street in Miami, has been very much at the forefront of the move for the family reunification. It is, as he will point out, to anybody who asks, and you should probably have him on your show, it's something which can be done.
Actually.
Have you had him?
Yeah, a couple of times, yes. We've talked about it.
Oh, excellent.
This.
Yeah, right. As he always points out, this can be done by a simple stroke of the pen from Obama. There's really nothing, and maybe before the election he could have said, well, I got to wait till after the election, but we're well past that. So there's really, it's understandable how it is that this hasn't been done, and it would do so much to relieve the pressure and to reunite so many families and help to put some balm on all the wrongs that have been done to Haiti.
So what's your story, your next story that you're going to be filing in Haiti Liberté?
Well, as I say, this week we have a very interesting piece by a group we work closely with on the housing projects, and we probably will have a few more on the sort of shortcomings of the reconstruction efforts over the past 4 years, but really what we're focused mostly on is the future and what is happening with this movement, how will it be able to emerge from under this hold that the U.S., the U.N., and the Martelly regime have put on the people? And in many ways, I can say I'm quite optimistic that the next few months may be good months for. There's a kind of a joke going around Haiti, you chase, they're saying 2014 is going to be a much better year than 2015.
That is Haitian humor, isn't it?
Yes, that is. Yeah, it's very, very dark. But it's in any case, I think that there is real momentum, real traction to this popular movement that we haven't seen in Haiti for quite some time. And, of course, we don't know what kind of repression may come. There's been quite a bit already, but it may be stepped up. And, of course, if they do assassinate some of the leaders, as has happened in the past, that, of course, makes all the bets off. But we have a genuine uprising underway in Haiti, and I think it may not be too long before we start to see it in the U.S. press headlines.
Well, Kim, thank you so much for being with us, as usual. Very, very informative session, and we'll keep following the story. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me again, Utrees, and I hope to talk to you again soon.
Great, thank you.
Okay, so long.
Well, that brings us to the end of this program, and I'm hoping that you're beginning to see, as we stress the need for context, we're not just talking about an earthquake and its aftermath. You see how the dots have to be connected to make full sense of what is happening. The role, he called it, of the NGO mafia, these people who are looking for disasters. They just love the idea of disasters because that's how they earn a living. They come in, they swoop up a whole ton of money, as this one company called Chemonix has apparently done, sweeping up so many millions of dollars. Whether they are above board or not, they have connections, so they make a lot of money. There's a lot of money to be made on the backs of people's grief and absolute suffering. We've learned that the President Clinton, who likes to have these picture opportunities, he has quietly slinked away, shut the doors, and moved away because, he sees no further advantage. We heard the role of Hillary Clinton in imposing a leader, the State Department, that the State Department wants in, and he's in. He's not the best leader for the country, but they have installed him. How does that relate to the fact that now hundreds of thousands, if not millions of Haitians, are still in misery 4 years down the line? There is a connection there. So when we talk about these things, remember, there are all these different dots, all these different things to look at. It's not just people, you know, feeling better. Do they have a home and do they have running water? That's one level. But you see how all these concentric circles of interest are operating, predicated on human suffering. They make their living, they make their political currency, if you will, on the basis of people's suffering and continued suffering. So I hope this session with Kim Ives opened our eyes a bit when we hear about earthquakes or any natural disasters, especially in countries that have been the repeated target of other interests for all kinds of reasons. We had previously discussed with Kim the anomaly that Haiti is. It's the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere, and yet it's the richest because it is just brimming with mineral wealth, with gold, with oil, large deposits. People are very much interested in Haiti. They just don't want the Haitians there. They're a little problem. You know, you just have to get rid of the Haitians and everything would be just fine. So I want to thank you for being with me today and for sharing this program. And of course, our sentiments are with the people of Haiti, hoping that they have the strength to pull through. They have been through so much, such misery that they don't deserve. You know, they don't deserve this kind of treatment. And they do deserve our support. One thing you can do is to keep pressure on, and I am going to do it, about this family reunification program, which is very vital, to have the relatives reunite with their families and support them during this protracted time of need. So thank you for joining me today, and of course, hopefully, you will join me again tomorrow. Tomorrow, we're going to get it on tomorrow because we're going to be talking about our friend, Mr. Dennis Rodman, and the controversy that surrounds him. You want to keep it right here. Stay tuned for Occupied Territory America with Mike Fader. You can certainly drop me a line at leadstories@gmail.com or on Facebook, Lead Stories with Utrees Lead. See you tomorrow, and thanks again. I'm
Haïti, son belle musique, son bon à pied, son troubadou, son kata cérémonie, son kouachi, son tambour. Haïti, c'était au goût, c'était un set qui était pour nous. C'est...